Welcome to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation, featuring your host, classical homeopath Linda Morse. You'll learn the philosophy behind classical homeopathy and with special guests discover how its principles can be applied to many aspects of modern-day healthy living. Here's your host, Linda Morse.
Welcome to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. I am your host, Linda Morse, and I'm a classical homeopath. I'm here today with my special guest, Amy Lansky. Amy received her doctorate in computer science from Stanford University in 1983. After many years working at various Silicon Valley research institutions, she made an unusual career move. She became a student, writer, and promoter of homeopathic medicine. This was prompted by the miraculous cure of her son's autism with homeopathy. She is the author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy, now one of the leading introductory books on homeopathy worldwide. In addition to promoting homeopathy through her book and website, www.impossiblecure.com, online radio show, autism1.org, talks and correspondence with parents, she has served as an editor and columnist for a variety of homeopathic publications, and has been on the board of the National Center for Homeopathy since 2005. Amy also helped pass California's Health Freedom Bill in 2002 as an executive board member of the California Health Freedom Coalition. Amy, welcome.
Thank you, Linda. It's great to be here.
It's very nice having you. I understand that Max, your son, just graduated from high school this spring.
That's right.
How does that feel?
Oh, amazing. It's incredible. You know, I never take for granted what happened with him. God, it's almost 15 years ago that we began our homeopathic journey. He just turned 18.
Can you talk about Max's experience and your experience with homeopathy and how that came about?
Yeah, well, I guess it all began, it began in 1995, so I guess it's like 14 and a half years ago. The January of 1995, at the time, he was 3 and a half, and this was at the beginning of this whole autism epidemic that now is everybody hears about and is in the news. But back then, it was sort of the beginning of the large rise in autism, the early 90s.
Right. Not many people were as aware then as they are now.
Right. And there wasn't really much out there.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was three, the nursery school called us in and basically saying something's wrong with him. We had, we noticed, I have an older son, mm-hmm. Who's 3 years older than Max, so we knew that he wasn't speaking, there was something off. I sensed there was something off. He was always kind of in his own little world. He wasn't speaking. And so at that point, I just started looking for answers. I didn't know what was going on, really. And then we started seeing a therapist. So she just set to work with him, and he was tested, and he qualified for special education benefits, and he was becoming more classically autistic at the time. He was starting, he did start having some speech actually after I took him off of milk. This is something that since that time, mm-hmm. Parents of autistic kids have found that these special diets are really important. But at the time, there wasn't really much information out there. I just was grasping around, and I heard about the Feingold diet,
mm-hmm.
and they were talking about milk being something that is harmful, and Max was like addicted to milk. He used to drink like a half a gallon of milk a day.
Mm-hmm.
So when we took him off of milk, that was when he was three, he did start to speak somewhat, but he was starting to have echolalia and other more classic autism symptoms. So here we were just plodding along. He was, seemed kind of hopeless. And then I read an article in Mothering Magazine, which is this alternative parenting magazine,
mm-hmm.
about homeopathy. And it was an article by Judith Reichenberg-Ullman,
right.
Who I'm sure you know.
Yes, I do.
And she wrote a lot and wrote books about ADD and other behavioral problems in children. And I don't know what it was. It's like a 3-page article and explained homeopathic principles, and it explained her success with ADD. And I just thought, we just got to try this.
Mm-hmm.
People have asked me, why did you have confidence in this? I don't know.
Right. That would be my question.
It was
after one article.
Yeah, it was. I don't know. It just a bell went off in my head. I said, "This is something we must try." And after all, there wasn't even much out there. So I had a friend who was an acupuncturist, and she said, "Oh, there's this guy. He's a homeopath. He just moved to Palo Alto, which is right near where I live." Mm-hmm. And so we just. The next day, I also showed the article to my husband, and he said, "Okay, let's do it," you know. And so we made an appointment, and it turns out we were one of his very first patients.
Oh, my goodness.
In Palo Alto. He had just set up his practice, I think, 3 or 4 months before.
Mm-hmm.
We were his first autism patient.
Mm-hmm.
We went in, and, you know, it was a typical homeopathic interview, and I didn't know much about homeopathy at all. I had taken maybe some over-the-counter, you know, mixed remedies in the health food store for a cold or something, but I didn't really know anything about homeopathy. And so, I guess your listeners may have been told about what homeopathic interviews are like, but they want to know everything about the child, you know, the pregnancy and all the physical habits and everything that makes the child unique.
Right. It's a very extensive interview.
Yeah. And there were certain characteristics that Max had that pointed to a particular remedy that were like characteristic of him, and not of autism that weren't. This is very important in autism treatment, that the real typical symptoms of autism aren't as important as things that are just really unique about the individual. So
that's because you're always treating the person.
Right. That's right.
And so, not the disease.
And it turns out that one of the things I had said, apparently, unwittingly to me, I had said like 10 times during the interview that Max was very talented,
mm-hmm.
And he was, and by the way, he still is, that he was extremely, he still does, and then even more so had like a photographic memory, very visually
mm-hmm.
Able, which is actually fairly common in autistic kids, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
And he could imitate certain things he saw on TV perfectly, and he's just very musically, all artistically talented. Even at age like 3 and a half, I sensed this, and it turned out that there was like this one remedy, very small symptom in the homeopathic repertories that was talented with one remedy.
Wow!
And it's this remedy that they gave that. He prescribed,
mm-hmm.
and within, like, it was a Thursday morning, and we were using this water dosing, LM dosing.
Mm-hmm.
Within just a couple days of starting this, we started noticing that something had changed, that it's very subtly, like, his speech was just a little more fluid. Like, he would speak in this very kind of cogwheel way, like, he had to think about every word he was saying.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I was just watching videos of him back then, and his when he was 4. This was after he'd already been on homeopathy for a while, was starting to speak. Even
right.
then, his speech was very peculiar mm-hmm. intonation, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, things were just somehow shifted, and he seemed to just be more socially with us. So that was on a Thursday when we began. Over the weekend, we were noticing these very subtle changes. On mm-hmm. Tuesday, we went to his next session with his therapist.
Mm-hmm.
We did not tell her anything about the homeopathy. And
oh.
within like a minute or two, she said, "What did you do?"
Wow.
Something, she noticed this big change. And another thing that was like a very obvious change was that one of the exercises would be, she would give him instructions like, pick up the red block and put the green ball on this table or whatever. And he could only follow one instruction, and suddenly he could follow a sequence of 2 instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, this
was a big change all of a sudden.
Yeah, yeah. It was like something that, you know, like we or her could notice, you know,
mm-hmm.
the subtle but, you know, distinct shift.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of thing just progressed. I mean, it was a beautiful cure because there weren't that many. There were some aggravations here and there, but it was sort of a slow, gradual, but, you know, pretty straight line improvement. And after about 3-4 months,
mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It was very noticeable, you mm-hmm. know, something really. And so, you know, Steve and I were both computer scientists, and we're kind of more scientific. So we thought, oh, we'll do this experiment.
Right.
And I write about it in my book, mm-hmm. Where, you know, every month we would change the potency or the strength of the remedy. Like a bottle would last about a month, and we'd
right.
lift up to the next.
Right.
And we would notice this pattern every time in the month, and this is very typical of this kind of dosing too. So when we would start on a new potency, we would see a slight aggravation mm-hmm. For a couple days, 2-3 days, where he would be a little more agitated, and then suddenly we would see this shift, you know, like a change, like a step upward in ability, and so. And then it would continue and be good for the rest of the month, and maybe at the end of the month, we'd feel like he was moving backwards a little, and that meant it was time to start on the next level. Mm-hmm. So anyway, so we did this experiment where I was like making observations each day on a piece of paper, and Steve right. was going to change the remedy, but I didn't know when.
I see.
Over the course of a 2 or 3 week period.
I see.
And I think it was a 2 week period, and so I was like, you know, trying to make my observations. It's like already the end of the 2 weeks, and nothing's really changed, you know, no stark shift, you know. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the second to the last day, I said, no, suddenly there was a shift,
mm-hmm.
you know, like this kind of shift I was used to. And then it turned out that, yeah, he had changed the remedy, like, 3 days before.
Right, but he hadn't changed the actual remedy. He just changed the potency.
The potency. So that was really proof to us, too, that, like, there really was a correspondence. There was a real pattern that was being, you know, caused by this remedy,
right.
A noticeable change. Anyway, things continued. By the time he was, 9 months after taking the remedy, so the following fall, he mm-hmm. had the remedy for 9 months or so, the therapist said that she felt her treatment wasn't even necessary anymore.
Wow.
And
what a huge shift.
I know, but she said, oh, we'll keep him on the books for special education benefits because it's like a county, you know, thing, you know, so that, you know, it's free.
Right.
But then at the end of that year, so about a year and a half after we'd been on homeopathy, she retested him and he was testing above age level. So he was about 5 years old at that point. By the way, when we began, he was like at the fifth percentile.
My goodness.
And so he had gone from like very substandard, you know, abilities. And this is like, my husband and I both have PhDs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, pretty disturbing to like, you know, being, you know, above age level.
Right.
So it was about a year and a half process to that point. But he was still, like I said, at that point his speech, things about him weren't totally 100%. But at that point he was ready to go into, I guess I kept him in a Montessori nursery school, kindergarten. But by first grade, he was just totally in normal school, and I didn't mention his past to anybody. But
we're going to stop for a commercial break.
Okay.
You are listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with my special guest, author Amy Lansky, of The Impossible Cure, the promise of Homeopathy. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
Amanda, age 3. Carlos, age 9.
An abducted child is everyone's child.
Jada, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Tune in on Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart, the program that takes you on a journey through grief after the death of a child. Join Dr. Gloria Horsley, marriage and family therapist and bereaved parent, while she interviews and discusses with other bereaved parents and siblings how they have coped with the death of a child and gone on to create and realize new dreams. So tune in Thursdays at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time for Healing the Grieving Heart with Dr. Gloria Horsley, right here on Voice America Health and Wellness.
This ain't your mama's brain and health show.
Tune in and get ready for entertainment and information about your mind and body that will really change your life. Primal Body, Primal Mind Radio is a sane departure from conventional thinking about diet, health, and the brain. Host Nora Gedgaudas will also combine humor and science to illuminate the mind and open your eyes to the principles of neurofeedback and diet, which can help you and your family live a better life. Primal Body, Primal Mind Radio airs live Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
I will not pass gas in my house. I will not pass gas near my spouse. I will not pass gas in your face, because the gas I pass is worse than mace. A silent but deadly cloud of toxic waste. The end. Secondhand smoke contains hydrogen cyanide and other lethal gases. Don't pass gas, take it outside. Get the facts at don'tpassgas.org. A message from the American Legacy Foundation and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with host Linda Morse and her special guests. If you have a question about a topic discussed on the show, please address it via email to Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Again, that's Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. I am your host, Linda Morse, and I am here with my special guest, Amy Lansky, author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. Before we went to the last break, we were discussing Amy's son, Max, and how he was helped with his remedy. He was at the age of five when we left off.
Right, right. So at this point, I think, you know, if somebody met Max, they wouldn't think he was autistic at all. Mm-hmm. But there were still, he still had some social difficulties because he was behind, you know, socially. He hadn't gone through the normal process of, you know, socialization and stuff. And in fact, this is something I write about in my book, that mm-hmm. when a parent, you know, with an autistic kid or, you know, really severe behavioral problems and they do homeopathy, the parent has to really adjust to the changes in the kid. And that, we went through that, like, in the beginning he was in a Montessori school that was very strict, but that was good for him because he didn't have to interact with the other children. Mm-hmm. He was just doing these tasks that they do. Then when he started speaking and was getting better, he didn't fit in that school anymore. They weren't helping him socialize, and they thought, like, and so I moved him to a different Montessori school that was a little more social oriented, and mm-hmm. they didn't have any preconceptions about him, and they helped him socialize more. And then by the time he was in first grade, then I moved him to this private parochial school that my other son went to, and I didn't tell the teachers anything.
Right.
But still, like, in second and third grade, I would get sometimes in the middle of the year, a teacher would come to me and say, there's something a little strange about Max. He's like, he's really good at all these tasks. Now, you know, he does a good student, but a lot of times he's missing instructions, or he's just not getting the point. Mm-hmm. But he was having trouble still with some oral, like, processing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, so he would, like, the teacher would tell them to write a story about something, and then he would write this nice story, but it wasn't about the right thing or something. He was missing instructions, especially if they were presented orally.
I see. But he could understand written instructions.
But written better. So then at that point I would say, well, look, he has this history, and they would be shocked. They mm-hmm. couldn't believe it. I said, but, you know, just, he's much better with visual instructions, so, you know, can write it down or just make sure he's understood an instruction, you know. Mm-hmm. But by fourth or fifth grade, that was no longer happening at all.
So he was just like anyone else?
Just like anybody else. So I would say by the time he was like 10, he was completely free. All through this time, you know, we did keep him off of milk, but by that time, about 10, 11, he'd go off and he'd eat anything he wanted. He wasn't having any food restrictions anymore.
Was he still under homeopathic treatment?
Yeah, so all through this, he was being treated. And in fact, these oral processing problems also went away with the correct remedy. And the first couple of years, those first 2 years, like from 3.5 to 5.5, he was on the same remedy. And then after that point, he went through, I would say, two or three other remedies until he got to the point. Actually, he's still probably, his basic constitutional remedy is now the same one as it's been since he was around fourth, fifth grade. So, which is really great.
Yes, that's a very good remedy, apparently.
Yeah, I know. Occasionally he's been on another one, but we've always returned to this particular remedy, which is his remedy. And so, you know, I talked about how he was very talented. He continued to be extremely talented. In fact, he's going off now to USC Film School. It's the number one film school. He's a very funny guy. He's well known now for his animations.
Oh.
So he's going to become an animator. What he'd like to really be is, like, you know, the creator of, like, a TV show like Family Guy or The Simpsons or something. That's the style of animation that he really enjoys, which is like humorous cartoons, you know. And
what a transformation.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens with him, but he's just an amazing kid and totally free, you know.
Yes.
So, like, as Hahnemann, the founder of homeopathy, said, you know, that the correct remedy can free you to live your life to the full, you know.
To fulfill your highest ideal.
Right. So I feel like he's there.
It sounds like he's there. Why did you write Impossible Cure, and who is your audience?
Right. So after this experience, you know, I had been, at the time when this all began, I was a research computer scientist at NASA, and this thing that happened with Max was just mind-boggling. I mean, it was life-transforming. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I always kind of had an interest in medicine, and I always had the Merck manual next to my bed and stuff. So it was kind of particularly interesting to me. So I started reading about homeopathy. I just quickly became, like, enthralled and fascinated. I would just sit up at night reading the Materia Medica, you know. It was just so interesting to me. I would read it to Steve and listen to this, and he'd find it very boring. But
right.
I thought it was
But not to you.
Anyway, I started taking classes, and then various things happened with my work. There was this big upheaval in my lab. Half the people left, so I decided to consult on the outside, and I started working less and studying homeopathy more. And then eventually, actually, somebody heard about Max's story, and they asked me to write an article for this online homeopathy site. So I wrote an article, and from that article, I realized soon I should write a book. I should write this book, and my goal was twofold was to let, you know, other autism families know about what happened with Max, and that
right.
is half the audience for my book. But I did decide that my book would not be about autism treatment, but it was going to be a general introduction to homeopathy, because that's what people really need to know. I just couldn't believe that there was this medicine out there that was so transforming. And, of course, by this point, my whole family was using homeopathy, and I kept seeing more and more amazing things happen to all of us. I just said, this is like a secret that's in the bag. I'm going to let this out of the bag because people have to know how their lives can be transformed. And
It's a very interesting and well-written book, and gives you a wonderful grasp of what homeopathy does.
Yeah, when I wrote it, I was like, I didn't really know where it would go, and I wasn't known in homeopathy, but it's been very successful. And it's a general introduction to homeopathy for, you know, anybody, but it does have a whole chapter on Max and what happened to our family. So it's very popular in the autism world, too. And it also covers, it's basically everything you ever wanted to know about homeopathy except about the remedies themselves. So it's not a how-to book. It's not like take this for these various ailments.
It's the
philosophy. It has scientific studies. It has the history of homeopathy. But it also has very important information for practitioners. Like, it's used as a textbook in the schools because it teaches about how the various dosing methodologies were developed and how they're done. It has, and for patients, it has, like, how to prepare for your appointment and what to expect from, you know, what various responses to the remedy mean. And the other thing that's made it truly popular and why people enjoy reading it is that it has, like, dozens of first-person stories written by patients that I kind of collected over the years online and elsewhere. So it's not just our stories, my family stories, but it has, like, dozens of stories for lots of different ailments written in the, you know, voice of the person who experienced their cure. So the title, Impossible Cure, so it conveys, you know, kind of a double meaning, which is that, that you know, people say homeopathy is just impossible.
They definitely do, but apparently not.
Yeah. Yes, and the other meaning is that it can cure things that people say can't be cured, like autism or...
So how does homeopathy cure autism?
Right, well, it cures autism, I guess, the way it cures anything else that it cures, which is that it enables the body to heal itself. And in the case of autism, you know, it's my belief and the belief of, I would say, the majority of parents of autistic kids that I would say more than 90% and maybe 99% of these kids are vaccine damaged.
Mm-hmm.
Not all, they could be suffering from various environmental poisonings of various kinds that affect various aspects of the body, not just the brain, but also the intestinal system and everything. So, and it's generally becoming more acknowledged that autism is an autoimmune disease.
Mm-hmm.
And that is also, by the way, why, you know, a lot of other things that have increased are autoimmune diseases, things like very severe forms of allergies that kids have now, or, you know, adults have lupus, and so there's a huge rise in autoimmune diseases, and many people feel that's because of over-vaccination. Because after all, vaccination, you know, exercises the immune system
right. And
overstimulates the immune system, and then eventually, you know, the immune system can start going bonkers and attacking the body itself, autoimmune disease. Diabetes, also an autoimmune disease. That's type 1 diabetes on the rise.
Yes, everything's on the rise. In your book, you mention Dr. Philip Incao. And that he says that anything that the body can get through will strengthen it. And I think this speaks to the measles and mumps and chickenpox vaccines that people are getting now instead of having their children actually get measles, mumps, or chickenpox.
I know. People in my generation, I'm 53. I had all those diseases.
So did I.
And I thank God I did, because once you really have those diseases, first of all, you really are immune to them. And second of all, people believed, pediatricians saw that children, once they've had these childhood diseases, they developed, you know, it helped them develop psychologically and you know, their whole being improved. That's why we got those diseases. People feel that is a natural part of our development.
Right.
And by robbing people of the natural experience of these diseases, they're actually robbing their children of this developmental
possibility.
This thing that's supposed to help them develop. And what people also don't understand, although doctors should, is that the way vaccines work is not the same as... There's two parts to your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
There's sort of this general immunity that your body uses to heal itself and attack the invader. And then there's this specific form of immunity, which is the kind that vaccines enhance, which are just to these specific diseases. And that by overstimulating that kind of immunity, you actually weaken your more general form of immunity. So by the same token, this is really relevant now with these all this flu vaccine stuff going on, mm-hmm. that the people who get the flu vaccine are actually, they may be hyper immune to a specific type of flu mm-hmm. that the vaccine is, but then they're under immune or what more defenseless against other flus. So anyway, so unless you're given a vaccine for the very specific flu that you're definitely going to get, which we don't always know, then you're better off with your general purpose immune system.
We will be right back after this break. You're listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with my special guest, Amy Lansky, author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. I'm your host, Linda Morse.
Amanda, age 3. Carlos, age 9.
An abducted child is everyone's child.
Jada, age 14.
To get free Amber Alerts on your cell phone, go to wirelessamberalerts.org. A child is calling for help. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
We live in a time of economic uncertainty. Gas prices are up. Healthcare costs are up. And sometimes the market is down. But studies have shown that by mastering your own energy, you can still live a life of prosperity. Listen to Master Your Energy, Master Your Life with your host, Siobhan Moran. Siobhan will show you how to overcome the negative energy of recessionary headlines and give you tools to deflect the harmful effects of subtle negative energy. Master Your Energy, Master Your Life. Friday mornings at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on the Seventh Wave Network. What goes through your mind when you think of food? It sustains us physically and nurtures us emotionally. It is central to so many different facets of our lives. Join Pam Keatsman and Andrea Olguin for Carefree Food Bites, a show that is quite literally a foodie's dream. You'll learn the simplicity of food, how to prepare it, grow it, and more. You'll learn that it doesn't have to cost a fortune and receive party planning tips, marketing of recipes, and more. Carefree Food Bites is heard Fridays at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
Every day, the chances of becoming a victim of mercury poisoning increase. Mercury poisoning may cause neurological damage that impairs learning, vision, and memory. And mercury itself has become part of our everyday lives, absorbed by certain fish, taken into our bodies, and passed on to our children like a common cold. But you can stop this. Log on to earthshare.org and find out how. A public service message brought to you by EarthShare and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with host Linda Morse and her special guests. If you have a question about a topic discussed on the show, please address it via email to Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Again, that's Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. I'm your host, Linda Morse, and I'm here with my special guest, Amy Lansky, author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. Amy, we were talking about vaccination and autism.
Right. Okay. So I've just talked about how that is the cause of, I would say, the majority of cases. Also, by the way, they put in these vaccines these adjuvants like mercury and other toxic substances, which only, you know, exacerbates the situation. And from what I've heard, increases the chance that a person will develop this autoimmune reaction. So some people feel the mercury is the cause of the autism. In my view, it's a combination of the mercury, which increases the chance that a person will, you know, have an autoimmune reaction, plus overstimulation of the immune system with tons of different vaccines that these kids are getting. You know, they're getting so many more than we ever got. I mean,
yeah.
Dozens and dozens. Too much for any child or any person to endure.
I have a specific question.
Yeah.
Is there a particular homeopathic remedy for autism? I think that's important for our listeners to know.
Yeah, it's really important to know that that is that there isn't. That the way homeopathy works is that a remedy is chosen that meets, that matches the characteristics of each individual person. And that's what makes homeopathy a really difficult practice, too, because the homeopath has to find that remedy, and sometimes it takes lots of different tries. Mm-hmm. And the only way the homeopath can find that remedy is by, you know, through usually just verbal discussion with the patient or the parent to understand that person as completely as they can. So in the case of autism, like I said, you know, most autistic kids have various common symptoms, but those aren't the ones that will probably find, you know, lead to the correct remedy.
Right.
It has to be something that's very unique about that person, their history, what really defines them.
So when you took Max in, even though Max couldn't express himself,
right,
you and your husband were so clear about what was going on, and that was how the homeopath came to the remedy, by observing Max,
right,
and your input.
And there are even some easier things that help too, and not just, you know, emotional, behavioral, mental. There's things like food sensitivities, like in Max's case, how he was, we knew that he was harmed and helped by through, you know, removing the milk.
Right.
You know? So he had a milk sensitivity. He also had like a certain way of sweating, you know, at night. You know, he would get a sweaty head in a certain particular way, or have a certain sleep position. I discuss all those kinds of things in my book because it's really important. This is in Chapter 8 of my book, How to Prepare to Go to a Homeopath, because you just really have to think about yourself from head to toe, every aspect of your being, things that like a regular doctor would ignore, like is a person biting their nails, or they get nervous in certain situations, just everything about the person. So it's really important to think about all these things, food cravings, just everything, reactions to certain environments like the ocean or the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
Max, for example, just really did, I noticed, was better. I think it was better, you know, at the ocean, just mm-hmm. things like that. These are really important things, but they're not the kind of things most people go to a doctor and they don't even tell them anything. The doctor measures various things, and the doctor really doesn't know anything about the person. That's the really the only thing that the homeopath cares about.
Would you like to talk a little bit more on that first interview? Because I think that could be very interesting for our listeners, and then what to expect after that interview, after the one takes the remedy.
Right. Well, God, it's so long ago. It's hard to remember. But I guess... And, you know, I didn't really, I had read that article in the magazine, so I kind of had a feeling for the kinds of things that he wanted to know. But I guess I told him about my pregnancy,
mm-hmm.
And even my feelings about the pregnancy, things that happened during the pregnancy. Another thing that happened was that he had had pyloric stenosis.
Mm-hmm.
After he was born, he had this surgery. This was this closing of the stomach.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it was actually an inherited thing. My husband had had it.
Mm-hmm.
And the family history, you know, this is something that even doctors will want to know about, like a history
yes.
of cancer, diabetes in the family. Actually, my brother's schizophrenic, too, so that was also part of the mix.
Mm-hmm.
He had this sweating pattern. He would sleep on his back with his hands over his head.
Mm-hmm.
And that was something I really saw was affected by the remedy.
Huh. That changed.
I would notice, you know, when he needed more, or like, you know, that it would, you know, ameliorate or get worse, you know, depending on if he needed the remedy. It was really affected by the remedy, his sleep position. Let me think. The milk, he also really liked salt and
mm-hmm.
butter.
Mm-hmm.
And really, he loved things like hot dogs, you know, that kind of really spicy thing, which is characteristic of Yosemite. So
that's how the homeopath, with that information and more information that you gave him, came to this remedy.
Right.
That worked so effectively for him.
Right. And then he decided to give this dosing, this water dosing, which is a more gradual but more regular dosage of the remedies. Sometimes the homeopath will give like a single dry dose, and it will last for quite a long time, a month or several months. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they'll give it in water where you can take it a bit more regularly. We were doing it every day. I realize now that was probably not necessary, but at regular intervals, you would take this dose in water. And so then there's various kinds of responses that people can have, and it's really important to understand that and to communicate with the homeopath too. Sometimes, you know, a remedy works because it can cause the symptoms that you're experiencing.
And yes. That's why it works.
Right. So let's say a symptom of the remedy and yourself is restlessness.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the remedy can cause restlessness in a healthy person, but the sick person has restlessness. So hopefully the remedy will actually cure the restlessness. But one thing that can happen, especially if the dose is a little too high, is that the person will have increased restlessness. And hopefully it will only last just a few days. Now that can be a sign that the remedy is working. You know, if the remedy was doing nothing, it wouldn't have any effect on you.
Right, because it's one of one's symptoms which is being aggravated.
Right, so that's called an aggravation, and it's nothing to worry about. It actually can be a good sign. If it's a very severe aggravation, then the homeopath can do things to ameliorate it a bit. But usually, you know, after a few days, it will settle down, and then you'll have the opposite effect. So it's sort of like.
That's what you saw with Max.
With Max is that he had, that was what would get aggravated at the beginning of the month, is he would get more restless. But then we would see this amelioration. The restlessness would calm down, and then suddenly we would see cure on various other levels where he would, you know, have this more cognitive improvement of his language and his social understanding and everything else. And then when I realized he needed more was when the cognition and the language, that would deteriorate a little bit.
Uh-huh.
So that was the time for more. So it was interesting in his cases that he would get an aggravation of certain things, like the restlessness at the beginning. Mm-hmm. And then when the dose was wearing off, then the more important symptoms, these more central symptoms like his language cognition would slowly go down a bit, so then it was time for more.
You are a scientist. You have a scientific background. Are there any scientific studies that prove that homeopathy actually works?
Well, yeah, that's actually the biggest part of my book. The biggest chapter is these scientific studies, and there's just more and more that have appeared since my book came out. So I think some of the most convincing studies are the ones done on animals, because like you can't really argue that like some pigs, you know, are having the placebo effect, you know. And so there's various studies that like were done in Europe. There's a lot more studies done in Europe and in India than in the United States, because homeopathy is more accepted and more supported. And, you know, these studies cost a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So in the United States, there's really not the money to do many homeopathy studies. Nevertheless, they are being done. There are studies on treatment of dysentery, you know, severe diarrhea in third world countries, which is a really important result, because millions of kids die in these third world countries from these problems. And there's more recent work that's come out that's actually how it may be working, this work done in the field of material science. This professor of the named Rustam Roy at Penn State University, he's like one of the world's leading experts on the structure of water.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that people think water is just water, you know, as these molecules floating around. But it turns out that there's various kinds of bonding structures that can form between the water molecules. And so there's a whole field of biophysics on the structure of water. And so this guy, Rustam Roy, did some experiments with homeopathic dilutions. And of course, people argue homeopathy can't be anything because there's nothing there. They say that the remedies have been so diluted that there's not even a molecule of this original substance in the dilutions. However, even though that's true, that doesn't mean that the structure of the water hasn't been affected by the homeopathic potentization process, by this process, and that's what he found. So this is just a recent study. I mean, it just was published in, January 2007, that he was able to take various potencies of different remedies, like two or three different remedies and different potencies, and all of them beyond Avogadro's number, which means all beyond the point at which there was any molecule left. Okay, and he was able to use various instruments that it could not only that could detect specific signatures in these dilutions that were specific to the remedy and even specific to the potency. So he could say, okay, yes, the signature picked up by these instruments, say this is a 30C potency of Nux Vomica, and this is a 200C potency of Natrum Muriaticum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this is so important. I mean, like, the fact that this hasn't been publicized more is crazy. I mean, this is, like, monumental, because not only does it prove that there's something there, but it also gives homeopaths and homeopathic pharmacies a way to, you know, test their remedies and see that, you know, if they're, you know, correct, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the science keeps coming out. There was another thing that just came out this year that was using homeopathic potencies on cancer cells, okay, the in vitro cancer cells, not even on people, and they were the remedies were actually killing the cancer cells.
Oh, how that's recently published?
Yes, this was just came out this year. So, I mean, this is such important stuff, and of course, this is information that the giant big pharma doesn't want to hear, because they make a lot of money on chemo and radiation and, you know, the big cancer machine. So, you know, if these very cheap homeopathic potencies can kill cancer, that's not something they want people to know about.
We will be right back after this commercial break. You're listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with my special guest, Amy Lansky, author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy.
Now we'll hear Mozart's violin concerto.
Ben's rendition is awful because he's playing a violin with a banana. But bananas could help you become a better violin player. Eating fruits with potassium and other nutrients help your muscles work better. So bananas can be instrumental after all. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What would you do if you knew that you could not fail? The Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile is a radio forum for some of the world's most influential people in the fields of health, wellness, and human potential. Dr. Pat brings together and introduces visionary scientists and futurists, environmentalists, educators, business leaders, inventors, filmmakers, authors, artists, mystics, and healers who inspire and support individual and collective growth and positive cultural shifts. This award-winning radio show empowers the listening community to be the change they want to see in the world. Tune in every Thursday at 8 a.m. Pacific for the Dr. Pat Show with Dr. Pat Basile, radio to thrive by.
This ain't your mama's brain and health show.
Tune in and get ready for entertainment and information about your mind and body that will really change your life. Primal Body, Primal Mind Radio is a sane departure from conventional thinking about diet, health, and the brain. Host Nora Gedgaudas will also combine humor and science to illuminate the mind and open your eyes to the principles of neurofeedback and diet, which can help you and your family live a better life. Primal Body, Primal Mind Radio airs live Wednesdays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel.
There was this house that was almost saved from a fire that was almost put out by people who almost volunteered. As generous a nation as we are, sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. We almost come forward in times of need. Almost. But almost giving is the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. To find out how, check our website at don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
You're listening to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation with host Linda Morse and her special guests. If you have a question about a topic discussed on the show, please address it via email to Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Again, that's Linda at lindamorsehomeopathy.com. Now, back to the program.
Welcome back to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. I'm your host, Linda Morse, and I'm here with my special guest, Amy Lansky, author of Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy. Amy, I wanted to ask you, what's the relationship between herbalism, naturopathy, Bach flower remedies, and homeopathy?
Right, well, this is very important that people understand, because in the press and, you know, in general parlance, you know, people use the word homeopathy incorrectly. They use the word homeopathy for anything that's kind of like natural medicine of some kind. And it's very important to understand that homeopathy is a specific form of natural medicine. So it's true that homeopathic remedies are made from natural substances. But, for example, herbalism is the use of plant tinctures. So they're all made from plants, and they're in substantial form, like they're tinctures made out of these plants. And the way they're applied is according to various, you know, folklore, things that have been known to work. And, you know, it's a whole other system of medicine, you know, a viable and important system of medicine, herbalism. But it's not the same as homeopathy. Mm-hmm. So homeopathic remedies are made from not just plants, but also minerals, and even animal substances like various milks of different mammals, or from poisons from different snakes and insects. And even they're also made from various disease products, and that's kind of an icky part, mm-hmm. a truth, but they can be made from, from the pus of a scabies pustule, or from gonorrhea, and, you know, these other kinds of diseases. Mm-hmm. So, but the other thing is that they're also potentized, which means that they're highly diluted, like we were just discussing.
Yeah, exactly.
And they're also during the process of dilution, they're shaken up, which turns out to be really critical. In Rustam Roy's research, he found that, you know, if you just dilute it. There really is nothing there, but it has to be shaken up, and this helps create these structures in the water. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and homeopathic remedies are potentized, so they're highly dilute, so they're not harmful. So, for example, you know, even if you're taking something made from some poison, it's so dilute, it's not really a poisonous substance anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then it's applied according to a specific rule, which is this: the law of similars, which is what we were talking about. Mm-hmm. If a substance can cause certain symptoms, it can cure it. And mm-hmm. that's how there's a single rule that determines how homeopathy is applied if you're a classical homeopath.
Yes.
So now methods of natural treatment. So in naturopathy, they're kind of like jack-of-all-trade practitioners. So they go and they learn a whole bunch of different modalities, including homeopathy. So naturopaths may practice some homeopathy, some exclusively homeopathy, mm-hmm. then they're really homeopaths.
Yes. So some are both naturopaths and homeopaths.
Yes. But they also learn herbalism and hydrotherapy, and so they're kind of jack-of-all-trade practitioners. But then if you really want to do homeopathy, though, my suggestion is to see somebody who exclusively practices homeopathy, because it's a very challenging discipline, and, you know, it really requires a lifetime of study. It's not just a little side thing, you know. Bach flower remedies. They're interesting because they actually say on them that they're homeopathic remedies,
mm-hmm.
But they really aren't exactly homeopathic remedies. Edward Bach started off as a homeopathic doctor. He worked in homeopathy, but then he went off and he decided he was an intuitive, and he understood properties of various flowers, and he developed his own method of creating the flower essences, which is different than homeopathic potentization, and his own methodology for applying them. So they're not truly homeopathic remedies, but they're also another viable system of medicine.
Yes, they all are.
Yeah,
viable, but they aren't the same as homeopathy, and I think you explained that very well.
Yeah,
we only have a few minutes left, and I know that you'd like to speak about the autistic community and how they're working, because you know quite a bit about that.
Yeah,
you're
well, one thing
involved.
I really encourage people to do, because I explain all this quite a lot. Encourage people to go to my website, which is impossiblecure.com. Because there they'll find like a discussion of lots of issues that people in the autism community care about. There's a page, an autism page, and there's also the archive of 4 years of radio shows where I discuss like tons of this stuff. So I encourage people to go to the website and they can find all this information. And one thing that a lot of people ask me about is now, in contrast to back in 1994, now there's so much out there in autism treatment. And parents are kind of frantically searching and trying everything all at once and going crazy. And if people are interested in trying homeopathy, some things work better with homeopathy than others. Some treatments that parents pursue are so harsh that they really kind of interfere with homeopathic treatment.
Mm-hmm.
Some are very beneficial, like doing these diets along with homeopathy is a very good thing because the diets are very irritating. I mean, the problem foods are very irritating to the children, so it's good to eliminate them if they're causing problems. So,
do you have all of this information on your website?
Yeah, there's a discussion of a lot of this on my website, in the archive of the radio shows. And the radio shows, if you go on the homepage on the right side, there's a pointer. It says the annotated archive of the shows. And each show is described what the content of each show is, and you can download and listen to it. It's all free. So I encourage people to go listen to it.
We just have a few seconds left. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners? This has been such an informative show.
Well, I really want to encourage people to take charge of their own health and to understand that you are the person who can cure yourself, that homeopathy can help you do that. It can help stimulate your body to cure you. But you have to take charge and really determine your life course, your health. Take charge and exercise what I like to call your health freedom, the freedom to over your own health and not give it away to somebody else. And that includes for your children as well.
Absolutely. I want to thank you very much for being with us today. Amy's book is Impossible Cure, The Promise of Homeopathy, and her website is www.impossiblecure.com. Thank you very much for listening today to Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. Please join us next week when my special guests will be homeopath Barbara Juniper and nutritionist Karen Diggs. Please email me at the following address, linda@lindamorsehomeopathy.com. We would like to know what your thoughts are. You may, and if you would like to receive a weekly e-card. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you.
Thank you, Amy.
Okay.
Thank you again for joining Linda Morse and her special guests for Homeopathy, Health, and Transformation. Please visit us again for another program next Monday afternoon at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. And until then, have a wonderful week.